I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, a white city with a black mayor, a black city with a white mayor. We'll talk about some upcoming mayoral races that may be upending traditional assumptions about voting patterns in the South. It's our weekly political chat, and it's coming up next. But first, we're joined by Matthew Ho. He is a former Marine officer who fought in Iraq. He later returned to that country to work on reconstruction efforts there, and then became a State Department officer in Afghanistan. And last month, he resigned publicly by sending his resignation letter to the Washington Post. He's believed to be the first U.S. official to resign over U.S. policy in Afghanistan. And he joins us now in our Washington, D.C. studios. Matthew Ho, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Reading your resignation letter, I have to say, is very painful. And I was wondering if you could just read the last few lines for us.
Of course. Thousands of our men and women have returned home with physical and mental wounds. Some that will never heal or will only worsen with time. The dead return only in bodily form, to be received by families who must be reassured their dead have sacrificed for a purpose worthy of futures lost, love vanished, and promised dreams unkept. I have lost confidence such assurances can any more be made. As such, I submit my resignation.
Before these words, you actually apologize if you have any temper in these remarks. In fact, this is a four-page letter. You're only reading a couple of lines of it. Was it as emotional to write as it sounds?
Yes, it was. This decision took me quite a bit of time, and I was physically nauseous at times about this decision. I've been in service to my country for 12 years in one form or another. I've been through some hard things in my life. I've lost some friends. I've lost some colleagues. This was difficult. Yeah, as a Marine, you don't walk away from a fight. And here I am walking away from a fight, and it was very, very difficult to do. Very difficult to do.
Can you walk me through the process of deciding first that you had to resign and then you would do so publicly? Was there one incident or two that crystallized the decision for you, or was it a gradual process over time?
It was a gradual process, and it's probably been the culmination of my last, at least my last 7 or 8 years in service. Just as a quick note, in 2002, 2003, 2004, I worked for the Secretary of Navy, and I did correspondence for him. And one of those was to write casualty letters for Marines we had lost in Iraq. And just because of that, you got to know the families, and it became very personal. So this has always been very personal and very emotional for me since at least 2003. So I've always questioned what we're doing. I went to Afghanistan because I wanted to contribute. However, I'd studied the history of it. I have a lot of friends and colleagues who've been in Afghanistan, either in uniform or with the State Department. I listened to them. And then when I got there, I was fortunate to have been stationed in two different parts of the country, in the East and in the South. So some of the things that bothered me, I saw similarities between the two. So I knew that it just wasn't just an isolated problem. This was across the board where we're fighting. We're fighting people who are only fighting us because we're occupying them. And so after 5 months of writing reports, communicating this, and it's really kind of seeing the futility in it, I decided to resign. Because it is such a personal thing for me, I don't see how I could resign and just quietly go away. Because for me, the most upsetting thing is when I read a newspaper or hear a television report and they reference some mother's son or some wife's husband as being killed by the Taliban. And they put the capital T on the Taliban, and they make people back home believe that these are the same people that attacked us on 9/11. And that's not the case. That's absolutely not the case.
And you know it's not the case?
Because it's not. The people we're fighting with have no allegiance or ties to al-Qaeda. The other part of it, too, is that the Taliban with the capital T, which is so vogue to say right now, we chased them out of the country, and they still exist to some degree in Pakistan and Quetta, where they have sanctuary. And I hope people do understand that they have complete sanctuary in Quetta. But there's only a limited number of them. And so the rank and file who are fighting us are fighting us because we're in their valleys. And I don't believe they have any allegiance to Mullah Omar and the Taliban leadership that's in Quetta. They're funded by them, but I think that's where their allegiance stops. They fight because they're defending their homes, basically, as they see it. And not just from foreign occupation, but also from the central government. Because the central government has never done anything good for the Afghan people in the last 35 years.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. I'm speaking with Matthew Ho. He resigned last month as the senior U.S. civilian in Zabul province in Afghanistan. He's believed to be the first U.S. official to publicly resign over differences over the government's Afghan policy. Two questions that occur to me, and I'm sure you've already thought about this. First, do you think you spent enough time in the country to be so sure of your conclusions? I mean, you were there for 5 months, which is 5 months longer than a lot of other people have been there. But do you really think 5 months was enough time for you to come to such firm conclusions about the futility of the American effort there?
Yes, I do. I do. I've been a student of this for years now. This is what my career has been, warfare and counterinsurgency. I'm good at it, and I'm a professional at it.
The other question is, the fear, of course, is that Afghanistan will become a failed state. And if it's a failed state, why isn't it reasonable to believe that it would become a host for al-Qaeda? The Secretary of State believes that. A number of other senior officials in the American government clearly believe that. So why isn't it reasonable to believe that if the U.S. withdraws, al-Qaeda takes over?
A couple of reasons why. One, I believe after 2001, al-Qaeda evolved. They will no longer tie themselves to a geographical or political boundary. If you look at the attacks over the last few years, including our own attacks on 9/11, you know, the majority of those attackers are not from Pakistan or Afghanistan. They're predominantly from Western Europe or the Gulf states or North Africa. So the logic is not there. And then also, too, for me, I believe our presence in Afghanistan only gives credence to al-Qaeda's message that the West is oppressing the Muslim world. And that only causes young men to be enchanted by the notion of defending their population and their culture against an invader.
Couldn't you say the same thing about Pakistan? I mean, you're not suggesting the U.S. withdraw from its efforts there, are you?
No, and actually the opposite. I believe there are two goals. There are two goals we should have. The two goals should be the defeat of al-Qaeda, and then the second goal would be the stabilization of the Pakistan government, primarily because of its nuclear weapons and primarily because of its, to put it lightly, rocky relationship with India. And the presence of 60,000 American troops engaged in combat in Afghanistan does not defeat al-Qaeda, and it does not stabilize Pakistan.
So what should the U.S. do? Leave right now?
If I had the opportunity to speak with the president, my opinion is stop combat operations in valleys and villages where people are only fighting us because we're in their valley and village. Realize that we have taken sides in the civil war that has been going on for 35 years, and realize that the only way to end the civil war is either let them fight each other out until they tire of it, which, of course, no one wants to see, or force political reconciliation. And I am by no means a Pakistan expert. However, I do believe we need to put much more of an emphasis on Pakistan.
It's my understanding that the President Obama's special envoy to Afghanistan and Pakistan, Richard Holbrooke, tried to persuade you to stay. Why not stay and try to persuade him of your point of view?
Because if I believed in the mission, if I believed it was worth our young men and women dying, I would have stayed in Afghanistan working there.
Who's going to persuade him of your point of view?
Yeah, I've already spoken to him. He's already received my letter. And then I believe by going public and being a part of the debate this way, these arguments and these thoughts are being heard.
What has been the response to your letter?
Personally, the response has been, for me, it's been overwhelming. I did not expect this to happen in the sense of the amount of interest in my story. I expected it to last for a day or two, and that would be it. But there have been two communities of support that have influenced me to stay involved in the debate until it doesn't make sense to do so any longer. The first community has been Afghan Americans who have reached out to me and said, "Hey, listen, Matt, you've got it right. The United States is enmeshed in a civil war there. You understand how societal dynamics work. You understand this concept of valleyism." And that has encouraged me quite a bit.
You're saying it's not even like a North-South situation like the U.S. Civil War, but it's actually valley-to-valley, people trying to hold on to their power base or defend.
Correct. And there are larger splits within the Pashtuns. There is splits within that as well. And that's the Civil War I think we're enmeshed in. And the other part, the other community that has really reached out to me and that has really pushed me to stay involved in this effort is active duty military. Their comments have been, "Matt, keep this up. You're doing..."
Because we don't know why we're here.
Exactly. We're losing guys for no reason. We're losing guys for no purpose whatsoever. And so that has really influenced me to stay in this debate as long as it makes sense to do so, because it's wrong. I mean, our guys are getting killed for no good reason.
What about your fellow diplomats? Have you heard from them?
Of course. My counterparts throughout the country, before I resigned and after I resigned, have generally been in agreement with me. A friend of mine who had been there for a year, she said to me basically, "I wrote what you wrote in your letter for 12 months and never got a response back." So I think across the board, military and civilian U.S. government, there's been a lot of support and a lot of agreement, and it's encouraged me to continue being a member of this debate.
Has anyone raised an objection that's given you pause?
There have been some folks who've brought up some really good questions. I mean, the hardest question to answer is, what do we do next? And it's difficult. There's a quote, and I'll mangle it, and I don't know who said it, but a buddy of mine said it to me when I was down at Kandahar one time. Listen, just because you can see all the details and all the complexities of the problem, by no means does it mean you can find the answers. And so there is no good answer.
Finally, I want to ask a question that I know engages at least some Americans. What about the women? I know former First Lady Laura Bush was very interested in the circumstances of Afghan women. I know a lot of Americans are very concerned once they have been made aware of the circumstances that many Afghan women live under. And they say that if we were to withdraw, as distasteful as this whole enterprise is, we would be consigning these women to hell. Is that a legitimate reason to stay, in your view?
It's not. And as horrible and as tragic as it is, it should not be the role of the United States government to do work that really is best suited for NGOs and IOs. We should not be trying to change the familial or cultural ways of civilization. We shouldn't. And furthermore, it's so embedded in the culture there. And trust me, I don't agree with it. It's tragic. It's horrible. I mean, you're talking about young girls who, once they reach the age of 12 or so, are shut away for the rest of their life. They will never leave their homes without being covered. They have no opportunities. The province I was in Zabul, literacy for women was less than 1%. However, it should not be the role of the U.S. government to change a society, and we shouldn't be spilling the blood of our young men for it or spending our money on it.
Matthew Ho was, until last month, a senior U.S. civilian in Zabul province in Afghanistan, and he was kind enough to join us here in our Washington, D.C. studio. Matthew Ho, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
If you want to read Matthew Ho's letter in its entirety, we'll have a link on our website. Just go to npr.org, click on Programs, and go to Tell Me More.